Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Fairy Born by Donna Joy Usher. Narrated by Rachel Beresford. Chapter 1. Be careful what you wish for. Willing my eyelids to stay open, I stared at the page. It wasn't that I didn't find the history of the Dark Years interesting. It was the fact that I had been studying for days. Jumping to my feet, I shook my head and waved my arms around. Only one more day, and then the final exams would be over. I couldn't believe it. Almost finished school. Reminding myself that I wouldn't be finishing anything if I didn't pass this exam, I picked the book up and carried it with me while I walked. The Dark Years. I had only been 5 when they had ended, but the chaotic fear that had ruled during that time had seeped deep into my pores. Reading about it, thinking about it, made me sick to my core. Santanus Gabriel. The name sent a shiver down my spine, no matter how many times I heard it. Had been the last living war fairy. Before him, war fairies had been benefactors of the people. They'd used their incredible powers to serve and protect. But before him, none had ever gone mad. A mad war fairy, hell-bent on raising his wife from the dead. Santanus had done evil, unspeakable things. Oh, they had fought him. They had fought the goblins that had ransacked the land in his name. No city left untouched, no village left whole. They had fought to save the children being sacrificed in his black magic attempts to regain his love. And they had been partly successful. But enough children had disappeared from their beds, their broken bodies discovered deep in the woods, to leave a lasting impression. Wards he'd placed on his body meant they hadn't been able to kill him, so they'd trapped him. Tricked by a lover, he'd drunk a potion that had torn his spirit from his body and entombed it in a rock. The rock had disappeared soon after, but that hadn't dampened the jubilation in the streets. They said nobody could fracture his soul from that stone, that the spell they had used to entomb him couldn't be broken. They said he could never rise again. But history had showed that never sometimes could. A terrified child clawed her way to the front of my mind, stealing my breath and freezing my blood. What if? What if he were to rise again? I slammed the book shut and took a deep breath. I wasn't a small child hiding under her bed anymore. I was 17, for goodness' sake. Soon to be 18. That thought distracted me more than any other could have. I sighed and thumped the textbook back onto the table. On their 17th birthdays, all witches received a wand. Sometime between then and when they turned 18, their familiars found them. Until then, witches didn't have access to their powers. I would be 18 in 9 days. Only 9 days for my familiar to find me, or they never would. I pulled my wand out of my hair. Its only current use was as a hairpin, and flicked it at the textbook. Rizzius textbook. Nothing happened. I kicked one of the chairs before pulling it out and slumping into it. Only 9 more days. Isadora Scrumpleton. My mother was standing in the door to the kitchen. What? I replied. The look on my mother's face hardened. Sorry, I added. Her familial, Tabby Cat Sebastian, stuck his head between her legs and stared at me with large topaz eyes. "This just in. Goblins have attacked Little Downs." We both turned to stare at the television. Mum picked up the remote and increased the volume. The screen showed buildings in flames with smoke pouring out of them. A group of witches worked together to contain the fire. One human held a hose, its ineffective flow doing nothing more than making him feel helpful. "The full extent of the damage is not yet known, but several people have been hospitalized and a few are reported missing." A woman staggered into view. "Donald!" she screamed. "Donald!" Blood trickled from a wound on her scalp. I put my hands over my mouth as I stared at the macabre scene. Mum flicked off the television. "That's the third attack this week." "How far away is Little Downs?"
"A few hundred miles northwest. A long way away."
"They're getting closer." She moved over to me and smoothed my hair back from my face.
"We're too close to London for them to dare attack us."
I wasn't so sure. Fear crept up my spine. "What's got into you?" she asked. I rolled my eyes at the television. Light goblin raids weren't enough to be worried about. "That's not what had you in a froth before." I sighed. "The final exam is tomorrow. Do you need help studying?" "It's not the theory, it's the practical."
"You know the prac isn't marked."
"It's so humiliating, standing in front of the class waving my wand." I crossed my arms over my chest and stuck out my bottom lip. "I may as well be waving a chopstick."
"Yes, well, there have been cases of a familiar choosing a witch without the witch realizing. Remember Lara Huntley's grandson? He was chosen by a bumblebee. They would never have realized if not for the practical tests."
"Mum?" I paused for a second, almost too scared to voice my real concern. "What if I don't get chosen?"
"You will, darling."
"I'm nearly 18. What if I don't? There was that kid over at Dartmouth College that never got chosen.
I hear he has a very good job at a law firm in London."
"I don't want to work at a law firm."
I resisted the urge to stomp my feet.
"What do you want to do?"
The question stumped me. I had been so focused on my powers coming in that I hadn't thought beyond that.
"I don't know."
"Well, maybe you should concern yourself with that." She ran her hands over her strawberry blonde hair, tucking the bits that had escaped her bun behind her ears. "Now, I need to work on a potion for the weekly witching news, and you need to study." She disappeared back into the kitchen, leaving me staring at my books and wondering what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. The students' chatter in the Ainsford College courtyard was a low rumble. I could hear the occasional mutter about goblins, but most of the conversations were centred on exams and holidays. I buried my head in my textbook and pretended to be unaware of what was going on around me. I always found that was the best way to escape the attention of the school bullies. Until Sabina got there with her wand, I was easy prey.
"Still studying?"
Sabby threw her bag onto a seat and then gracefully sat beside me. The sun caught in her fiery red hair and lit her green eyes.
"Trying to forget about the stupid prac."
"Oh, Izzy," she said, shaking her head. "I don't know why you get so worked up about it. Nobody else cares."
"It's easy for you to say."
I looked down to where her huge black cat sat at her feet. Phantom had showed up the very afternoon of her 17th birthday.
"You'll get chosen. You're a pedigree, pure-blooded witch."
The bell rang. I sighed and closed the textbook. Hopping up, I scanned the courtyard for Is Grinelda and her gang. The last thing I needed on my way to the exam was to be accidentally tripped. I claimed a seat near the back of the exam hall and took some calming breaths while I waited for the start bell to ring. When it did, I pushed all thoughts of the practical from my mind and turned over the exam paper. I read through the questions, relaxing as I did. No nasty surprises. An essay on the Great Fairy War, discussing how it had shaped the magic conventions that governed us today, and one on the cultural initiation of the war and the steps taken to ensure such a travesty wouldn't occur again. The last question was on the dark years. Santanus Gabriel. I'd heard people muttering that he would rise again. Admittedly, this muttering had been done after a drink or two at the Toasted Toadstool, where I waited on tables, and was normally shouted down quite quickly. But lately, with the goblin attacks becoming more frequent, the muttering had become louder, and the shouting down not quite so quick. I finished the exam with a quarter of an hour to go. I could see Sabby staring into space while she chewed the end of her pencil. She had been hand-selected in the Academy of Advanced Witching's early academy trials and offered a scholarship. Her magical strength lay in healing. She could already force tissue to knit back together and bones to straighten. That was what made her a formidable ally. While she chose to use her talents for good, the truth was she could also inflict pain. Finally, the bell indicating the end of the exam rang, causing everyone but me to cheer. We waited while the papers were collected, and then there was a stampede of humans departing the building.
"Right," said Rodismus Prangle, the head of the magic department. "Who wants to go first?"
Several hands shot up in the air. I was surprised to see Sally Blumberies was amongst them.
"Must want to get the torture over early," I whispered, as I nodded towards Sally.
"Oh, didn't you know?"
"Know what?" My voice sounded sickly, even to my ears.
"She got chosen yesterday."
As if on cue, Sally hopped up and strode to the front of the room. A shiny black raven perched on her shoulder, peeping out from under her thick, curly hair. She waved her wand at a chair, which rose obediently into the air. A polite smatter of applause followed her successful levitation. I felt a cold sweat break out on the back of my neck.
"She's a natural," said Sabina. "It took me weeks to levitate a chair after I was chosen."
Unlike the fairies, who worked with the five elements, witches' powers were target-orientated. More like talent. My mum's strength lay in household needs. She could use her magic for any household chore. That's why her column on the weekly witching news was so popular. She designed potions to do what she could with the flick of her wand, and then other witches could also use magic to clean and cook. Some witches were inventors, some builders, some farmers and hunters. The different ways the power presented were varied, every witch's powers uniquely their own. The trick was finding the extent of a witch's capabilities. I could hear Rodismus congratulating Sally and giving her instructions on what spells he wanted her to try. His job was to work out where our magical talents lay.
"Oh, well, that still leaves Leonard, Beryl and Anthea," I said.
"Hmm?"
Sabina responded.
"Hmm?"
I replied.
"Well, I overheard Leonard and Beryl swapping stories this morning. Turns out they've both been picked." Whiz bang!
I shot a panicked look at Anthea, who was sitting on the far side of the room. She glanced over at me, her thick glasses making her eyes look enormous. Her face took on a sympathetic look as she lifted the arm of the cardigan slung over her shoulders. A snake, disturbed from its warm bower, lifted its head and flicked its tongue while it tasted the air, searching for danger. I groaned and sat back in my seat. I couldn't believe it. I was the only one. The last. I could feel the icy fingers of fear clutching at me. What if I didn't get chosen? What if I were forever cut off from my powers? Tears threatened as I watched my classmates perform the spell set for them by Radismus. And then it was my turn. I could feel curious eyes boring into my back as I walked to the front.
Lucky last, Isadora, Radismus boomed.
I wished he would keep his voice down. I wasn't feeling so lucky.
Let's see if you can levitate that chair.
I can't, I told him.
You don't know unless you try, he responded much too cheerfully. Remember Ralph Huntley?
Yes, I know. He was chosen by a bumblebee and they never would have known if he hadn't tried.
I had my doubts about that story.
I mean, how could you not notice a bumblebee harassing you? As I lifted my wand, I noticed Isgrinelda nudge Gretchen. They were sitting in the front row. Oh, great.
Risius Charius, I squeaked.
Not surprisingly, nothing happened.
Why don't you give it another go?
Radismus's voice was filled with empathy.
This time, say it like you mean it.
I could hear the front row girls giggling.
Maybe her wand's broken.
Isgrinelda's thick accent made the words sound broken and clipped. I squirmed as my face started to burn.
Oh, look, her face is on fire, Gretchen said.
I could see Sabby's sympathetic face near the back, but the rest of the students broke into laughter. It rippled across the hall to where I stood sweating. I lifted my wand and concentrated on the chair.
Visualize the chair lifting into the air, Radismus crooned. See it floating.
A spitball smacked into my forehead. It quivered there for a second before falling to the floor where it lay in a goopy mess. I could hear sniggering as I wiped at my forehead with the back of my arm. Another one quickly followed the first. This one entangled itself into the hair hanging to the side of my face. I had to give it to Aphrodite. She was a great shot.
Lift your arm and command the chair.
I mean, seriously, could he not see the incoming spitballs? I looked out over the hall to Sabby. Anger blazed across her face and danced in her eyes. Her face was grim as she mouthed,
"You can do it."
No one ever teased Sabina. As I met her eyes, her fury infected me. How dare they make fun of me?
Isadora is a witch, or so we think.
The girls started the chant, but it quickly spread through the room, flowing up to mock me. A pressure built inside me, stretching me like a balloon. It filled me up, threatening to burst from my pores and roar towards the girls in the front row. The next spitball narrowly missed my eye. I could feel myself losing control, the strange power licking out towards them. I strained to hold it back, but each peal of laughter weakened my restraint until finally, like a wave, it broke over my boundaries and roared towards them. I pointed my wand at them and shrieked,
"Risius Charius!"
Every chair in the hall shot into the air. The previously giggling students squealed with terror. I held my wand up as the power washed through me and rolled out into the room.
Isadora,
I could hear Radismus calling my name.
Help me,
I said from between clenched teeth. My arm was shaking with the exertion of controlling the power.
Very gently, he said in a calm voice, lower your wand.
I lowered my arm a few inches, and the chairs plummeted a foot towards the floor. Several students screamed in terror.
Carefully, said Radismus.
As slowly as I could, I moved my wand towards the ground. I could hear some sobbing coming from the front row, and I was trying not to feel pleased, but after the years of torment, it was hard not to. Here was the weird thing, though. While Gretchen clung to the back of her chair with both arms, and Aphrodi stared at the ground while she wailed, Isgrinelda sat straight in her chair and stared at me, a triumphant look on her face.
"I think I'll drop around sometime next week for a coffee,"
Rodismus said once the chairs were safely grounded.
"It's been ages since I've seen Prunella. Hopefully she'll make her famous lemon cake."
"Okay." I was confused. I had just levitated an entire room full of students, without a familiar, and he was more interested in my mother's lemon cake. It was all a bit weird. Rodismus clapped his hands.
"Class dismissed," he decreed. "Have a great holiday, and good luck with the rest of your lives."
Everyone, except Sabina, sprinted from the hall. I could hear their cheering and yelling, and I wished I could join in their merriment.
"Holy moly," Sabby said, staring at me with wide eyes. "That was amazing. Why didn't you tell me you had a familiar?"
"I don't."
"You just levitated a room full of people."
"Seriously, Sabby, I haven't."
"So it's an embarrassing animal. What is it? A slug?"
"No."
"An ant?"
"I don't."
"Ooh, don't tell me. It's a spider."
I stopped and grabbed her by the shoulders. "Sabby, I haven't been chosen." She looked up at me for a few seconds and then burst out laughing.
"Of course you have. Come on, let's go home and get ready for tonight. We've got some celebrating to do."
She grabbed my hand and dragged me off towards the car park, while she chatted excitedly about what she was going to wear that night. I tried to listen to her, but I couldn't forget the feel of the power coursing through me. I had had many discussions with Mum and Grams about how it felt to cast a spell, and it had never sounded like that. A burst of energy, a moment where you felt yourself expanding beyond, a second of inexplicable power, a flash of lightning, but never a raging torrent that stretched to the horizon of your mind. I was scared and confused, but mainly I was relieved. It appeared I was not going to have to get a good job at a law firm in London, and to me, at that moment, that was the most important thing. Chapter 2. You call that a familiar? I went for a run when I got home, partly because I hadn't exercised for days, but mostly because I didn't want to answer any questions about the exam. I knew I'd have to talk about it eventually, but for the moment, I wanted to be alone to think. The feel of the pavement passing beneath my feet was hypnotic, and after I had run a couple of miles, I felt myself starting to relax. Maybe I had been chosen. Maybe the whole bumblebee thing wasn't so far off the mark. But there was a huge amount of prestige surrounding the type of familiar that chose you, and I had been hoping for an impressive one. I was going to be disappointed if it were a nit. Cats were the most popular, especially cats like Phantom, huge, aggressive, and aloof. After that, it was the reptiles. Diamond pythons topped the chart, with the smaller, venomous varieties not too far behind. Next on the list were the birds. Although it was cool to have a raven or a crow, budgies and cockatiels were not so desirable. Then there were the rats, which were better than mice, but even mice were better than insects. If you had to have a creepy crawly, the coolest were the arachnids. I wasn't sure how I felt about sharing the rest of my life with a spider. I ran past a field where a group of people were playing cricket. A batter hit the ball towards the boundary, and a witch leapt into the air, far higher than was humanly possible, and hovered there, waiting to catch the ball. Impressive, I muttered. Levitation of objects was common to all witches. Levitation of oneself was a great deal harder. Something to do with equal and opposite forces. Humans loved to think that while they slept, we all rode around on broomsticks. Apart from the fact that it was magically impossible, I had never worked out what their fascination with broomsticks was. How comfortable would it be to sit on a stick? Better a flying couch. Their control over air meant that some fairies could create floating objects, but these were pulled by flying creatures and were rare. I reached the pole I used to mark the halfway point of my run. A small white dog sat next to it, his tongue hanging out as he smiled a wolfy grin. "Hey, boy." I bent down to scratch his head and noticed my shoelace was undone. Lucky. Considering the day I was having, I probably would have tripped on it and broken an arm. I was retying it when I felt something warm and wet dribbling down the back of my right leg. Swinging around, I spied the dog with his leg still cocked. "Bugger off!" I shooed my hands at him. He slumped to one side as he stared at me, and then he broke eye contact and proceeded to lick his balls. Charming. I shook my head and started off towards home. It wasn't till I got home that I realised the dog was still with me. He collapsed on the front door mat, panting and puffing. I checked him over for a tag, but there was nothing on his black studded collar. Great. I was going to have to find his owner without any help at all. "Eric," I said to the front door, "it's Izzy." The house shuddered, and then the front door swung open. Generations of Scrumpletons had lived here, breathing life and magic into their home. The result was a witching house, a sentient being that protected us. The little dog leapt up and raced inside, making a beeline for the kitchen. I patted the doorframe as I entered and felt a glow through the palm of my hand. Eric was happy I was home. "What's this?" Mum asked, as the dog plonked himself in the middle of the room and started whining. "A dog?" I replied. "I can see that. Where did it come from?" "He followed me home," I said. "Must be lost." He walked over to where Mum was cutting up meat for dinner and stood on his hind legs. "And hungry," I added. "Poor fellow," Mum said, as she tossed him a piece of steak. Mum's familiar, Sebastian, jumped off the table where he had been sunning himself and sauntered into the kitchen to examine the new arrival. He extended his nose towards the dog and sniffed him. When he was satisfied there was no immediate threat, he turned his attention to Mum and meowed. "Oh, all right," Mum said, throwing a piece to him as well. "Where's Grams?" I took a seat at the kitchen table. "In her rooms." As if on cue, I heard footsteps echoing down the hall, and Grandma Bella burst into the lounge room. She wore a flouncy evening dress with her enormous python, Cyril, coiled around her shoulders like a shawl. Her hair, which had turned a shocking shade of pink since I'd last seen her, was piled on top of her head. The photos of Grams on the sideboard show a young woman with movie star looks and a large smile. The movie star looks are faded, but still present, as is the large, dimply smile and her mischievous blue eyes. "Wow," I said. "Got a date?"
"Oh, yes, but that's not important. Sabby told me the good news."
She spied the dirty white creature begging for food and her eyes widened in surprise.
"A dog?"
"Yes, it's a dog," I replied.
"There's no such thing as a dog."
I looked at her in concern. "Are you all right, Grams?"
"What have I done?"
She clutched her chest and sank into the chair opposite me, staring at me with wide eyes.
How do you feel?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?